We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, entitled Understanding Material Nature, text number 14. Bhuta Sukshmendriya Mano,
Bhuta Sukshmendriya Mano,
Buddhyadishriha Nidraya,
Buddhyadishriha Nidraya,
Dineshvasati Yastatra,
Dineshvasati Yastatra,
Vinidro Nirahan Kriyaha,
Vinidro Nirahan Kriyaha,
Bhuta Sukshmendriya Mano,
Bhuta Sukshmendriya Mano,
Buddhyadishriha Nidraya,
Buddhyadishriha Nidraya, Lord Chaitanya, he said clearly,
upon the inquiry of Sanatana Goswami that a living entity is the servitor of Krishna eternally. Krishna also confirms in Bhagavad Gita that the living entity is eternally his part and parcel. The part and parcel is meant to serve the whole. This is individuality. It is so even in the material existence. When the living entity apparently merges in matter, his gross body is made up of five elements. His subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, false ego, and contaminated consciousness. And he has five active senses and five knowledge acquiring senses. In this way, he merges in matter. But even while merged in the 24 elements of matter, he can keep his individuality as the eternal servitor of the Lord. Either in the spiritual nature or in the material nature, such a servitor is to be considered a liberated soul. That is the explanation of the authorities, and it is confirmed in this verse. ॐ ज्ञानतिभ्रान्तस्य ज्ञानाचरशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदानमियं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्दे श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगद्वये गोपेशा गोपिका कान्ता राधा कान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते
that everyone feels. Okay,
I am making some progress in my spiritual pursuit, and that is varies according to person. And there is nothing as objective, there is nothing as factual reality. It is just the mind. It is just one's individual experience. However, when we come to bhakti knowledge, we understand that, of course, it is a personal experience, but at the same time, it's a factual reality. So from a scientific perspective, then it has to be observable, it has to be verifiable, it has to be repeatable, it has to be universal, it has to be communicable. So, if you see, yes, from a bhakti perspective, bhakti yoga can deal with all these criteria. It can deal with all of them, and still it can give the individual experience, and at the same time it can present the factual reality. So that's why if you see Srila Rupa Goswami presents different steps in devotional service, starting from Shraddha, starting from a little bit of faith, then association of the devotees, to Bhajana Kriya, Sadha Sangha, to Bhajana Kriya, Anasana Vruti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. So the different steps, different progressive steps in devotional service of Bhakti Yoga is presented by Srila Rupa Goswami. That is verifiable. It is classified. Okay, this is how we can make progress in Bhakti Yoga. Now, if you take Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita itself, in the second chapter, Krishna explains the qualities of a Sthita Dharmani, one who is a liberated soul. So there, the question is asked, you know, how he is talking, how he is walking, how he is sitting. Arjuna asks all these different kinds of questions, you know. Siddha Pratyaka Bhasha, Samadhi Keshava, Siddha Thirkam Prapashayata, Himasita Prajayata Kim. So he asks all different questions, meaning, how is he interacting with other people? How is he using his senses? How is he not using his senses? So in this way, and how he is using his tongue? So in this way, Arjuna clarifies this question, can we define or can we perceive a liberated soul? And Krishna gives a very beautiful section of answers to these questions of Arjuna. Now here and again, this question, we can see that how a liberated soul sees the world, how he perceives the whole material creation. Now, in the verse before, that is the verse 13, the Lord answers that how a liberated soul deals with the material object which is external to him. So we can see the example. We can see the example of a flower. A liberated soul, a pure devotee, he sees a flower. He doesn't see for his material enjoyment. Rather, he sees in connection to Krishna. How we can use that flower to serve Krishna. So that is the vision of a devotee. Now, in this particular verse, it is explained how such a devotee sees his own body. So first verse is external object, which is external to him. Of course, everything is external to the jiva. But at the same time, here he is seeing how a devotee is seeing his own body. So here the whole description is given about a devotee is apparently merged in the material elements. A devotee is also merged in the material elements, and here the word Leena is used. Leena means merged. So the term Leena or merged is not exclusive to the impersonalists. Even in Bhagavatam, the merging word is used. However, with a different understanding altogether. So we'll explain that further. So here we can see that a devotee uses his senses in serving Krishna. As Bhagavad Gita in the 5th chapter, there's a beautiful description of a devotee, how he uses all his senses in connection to Krishna. And all the processes, like eating, sleeping, dreaming, evacuating, everything in connection to Krishna. So for a devotee, nothing is separate from Krishna. Everything is in connection to Krishna. In fact, everything is in connection to Krishna. And as Bhagavatam says, 9th chapter, 2nd canto, if someone sees anything not in connection to Krishna, that is the definition of Maya. So everything is in connection to Krishna. But the progressive process of devotional service is that we start seeing Krishna more and more in our life, in our devotional life. Say initially, when we start our devotional service, we always have this disconnect between service and Krishna. What to speak about seeing the material objects and Krishna? We have a disconnection between chanting and Krishna. Chanting is one way. We move our lips, sound comes, we hear. But that chanting and Krishna, we see them as totally different. Chanting is chanting and Krishna is Krishna. We cannot connect them. But with practice, with time, one see, okay, chanting is Krishna. We can see some, there is the, we can realize to certain varying degrees the known difference between Krishna and his name. Similarly, the same is applicable to service. We had to engage in service. So service is service and Krishna is Krishna. We tend to forget the connection between Krishna and the service because we get caught up in just in the externals. So then we don't find any feeling in serving Krishna. However, it's a matter of time. One tend to realize more and more we are actually serving Krishna. And there is some emotions in serving Krishna. So this is a progressive realization that a devotee has for his entire life, for his entire career. He is realizing more and more Krishna. He is seeing Krishna more and more in his life. He is seeing Krishna more and more in service. So that is the progressive realization of a devotee. Because as it is mentioned in this verse, Ihai Se Harendas Karmana Manasagira Nikhalasya Avastasu Jivan Muktasa Uchite. So beginning of this purport, Srila Prabhupada corroborates this verse of Srila Rupa Goswami that the position of a jiva is he's a servant of Krishna, and if he is considered liberated while being completely engaged in Krishna service with all his words, actions and mind in all places and in all circumstances. So that is the position of a pure devotee. Now, here we can see that a pure devotee is completely devoid of false ego. His vision is completely devoid of false ego. Something which is very difficult for us to understand. Because if you want to see something, say for me, I have these glasses. And I don't have any choice. If I want to see anything in distance, I need these glasses. It's very difficult otherwise. Now, if my glasses are colored, then I see the whole world in a certain tint of color. I don't have any choice. Because as far as I'm wearing a glass, I will see this world in a particular color of this glass. If I have a yellow glass, I will see the whole world in yellow color. If I have a red colored glass, then I will see the whole world with a red tinge. I don't have any choice. And for a living entity, a conditioned living entity, this glass is permanently fixed. And that glass is the glass of false ego. So whatever we see, whatever we perceive, whatever we think, everything is covered by false ego. So now we can really try to appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam and other bhakti shastras. Because here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada kindly is giving vision of a pure devotee. So one who doesn't have these glasses, who can see everything very clearly, without the covering of false ego. So that is the importance of Shastra. Here we can see the examples of devotees and we can see the Srila Prabhupada's devotional excellence in terms of his purport, which is devoid of any of the coverings. So we tend to see Srimad Bhagavatam, we tend to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in a routine way. We try to hear, this is Bhagavatam I am listening every day. And we get into a mechanical mode. We get into the switching off mode. Just like some watches are there, after some time of inactivity, it turns off. There's a timer to it. Or it detects the motion and then switches off. In the same way, when we listen to Srimad Bhagavatam also, we have a clock within. How does it work? Many times, after a few minutes, many times it is said, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That is the sleeping mantra. Because we get in the routine, you know, actually doze off. And what is the waking up mantra? Mahaprasade Govinda. So any times, this is actually story. One devotee, he always sleeps. It's a home program. This devotee always sleeps during the home program. He starts listening. In a few minutes, he actually falls asleep. And what happens is, whenever, at the end, when the Mahaprasada mantra comes, no matter what, whether it is loud or whether it is a little quieter, doesn't matter, he will open his eyes. It's like an automatic clock. So we can very easily get into this mode. We can say, oh, I have heard this so many times. But we need to see, this is something which is so high that this which we cannot really perceive. This is coming from such a higher source which is uncovered. Of course, the Supreme Lord is beyond that. And even the pure devotees, they have crossed that. So this is very much valuable. And many times Bhagavatam gives the experiences of such advanced devotees. It goes into such a degree that Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the heart of pure devotees. How is that? We cannot access the heart of a pure devotee. But Srimad Bhagavatam just reveals that freely. And Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita even reveals the heart of the Supreme Lord Himself. How is that? So this is the potency of this kind of books. So valuable. So if you want to go beyond the false ego, beyond the covering of the false ego, we have Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Very important. We naturally, the covering of false ego is so high that even in the material creation, we know the universal coverings. We can see that each covering is 10 times thicker than the other one. So it is very instructive to us. Say for example, if somebody wants to externally dress up as a devotee, it's pretty easy. We can wear a dhoti, we can wear a kurta, we can wear a sari, whatever, we can wear tilak. Externally, it is very easy. But as we get finer, as we want to make progress, if we want to go deeper, it is more difficult. It's not as easy. One can chant 16 rounds, one can to some degree follow for religious principles. But even the religious principles to the internal level, if you try to follow, it becomes difficult. It's not so easy. And if you want to be completely devoid of material association, or devoid of material desires, it's not so easy because it gets more and more difficult. So that is the final principle. And finally, getting out of false ego, it's not so easy. And a pure devotee is completely devoid of false ego in all their dealings. There is a very nice pastime of Srila Prabhupada in 1973 in Stockholm. Prabhupada was giving the explanation of different varnas, different first class, second class, third class, fourth class. And, you know, Prabhupada was giving, classifying according to varnashram, different kinds of devotees. Prabhupada was giving the whole classification. So one person, he was already feeling envious of Srila Prabhupada because devotees were serving Srila Prabhupada very nicely, addressing Srila Prabhupada with all respect. So he was feeling envious, one of the guests, not a devotee. And he asked Srila Prabhupada, so you belong to the first class, isn't it? So to show that, you know, Prabhupada is giving different classes of devotees, different classes of varnashram, and Prabhupada is belong to the highest. And Prabhupada, it is mentioned, Prabhupada was a bit surprised to hear such a question. And then he immediately answered that I belong to the fifth class. So this is the consciousness of a pure devotee. I belong to the fifth class because I am servant of all four classes. So this is the consciousness of a pure devotee. Completely devoid of false ego in all circumstances, in all time. Because, as it is mentioned in this purport, he is completely identifying as a servant of Krishna. Always engaged in Krishna's service. So that is the position of a devotee. Because false ego is the interconnection, it's the junction between the pure soul and the subtle body and the gross body. So that's like a junction. It is a subtle nature, you know. It actually gives identification to the whole material creation, to the whole material nature. And we need to aspire to come to this platform of acting on force without false ego, seeing the world without false ego. And Krishna gives hints many places or directly explains how we can see Krishna in matter. 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita gives many examples how we can, by drinking a cup of water, we can see it is an energy of Krishna, Rasoham Aksukautaya. And even sound, this was an interesting lecture given by Srila Prabhupada. It was in Bombay. Many times we hear lectures recorded in Bombay, it's very noisy. I mean, now also, many devotees give lectures in Bombay, it's very noisy because so many things are going on. The traffic is there, people are talking, so many things are going on. And in this lecture, Srila Prabhupada was telling, quoting this verse from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and he was telling, can you hear this noise? And it was noisy, you know, the background noise was pretty audible. And can you hear this noise? This noise, actually, this is the energy of Krishna. One can't think of Krishna just by hearing this noise. So this is the vision of a pure devotee, devoid of false ego. I was thinking, it is so hard for us. Even listening Krishna's name, thinking of Krishna is difficult. So what to speak about hearing just noise and seeing this as Krishna's energy. So this is the training. So the training in Krishna consciousness, one is based on Shastra and second is based on practical application. So by engaging in devotional service, slowly one gets the realization. One starts thinking about Krishna. One starts feeling about Krishna. So this is the progress for a devotee. So one may question, are we making progress in devotional service? The answer is, one can see one's own heart. One can see how many spiritual desires we have or how much material desires we have. And we can see how much are we feeling for Krishna? How much are we thinking of Krishna? How much are we seeing Krishna as the reality? So this is applicable while doing any service. It is applicable even while chanting, because chanting is the biggest test. Especially when you are doing japa, it's a test. That's the test. Are we really feeling Krishna while chanting? As Prabhupada said, chanting means experiencing Krishna. Because through hearing, just by hearing, one can experience Krishna. So this is a test. So for even for kirtan, one can get nicely carried away, one can get absorbed because there is musical accompaniment. There are nice tunes. So I like that tune. I like that kirtan because I like that tune. And according to our taste in tunes, we may like, that is good. Which is good because we are chanting holy name, no doubt. But when it comes to japa, what happens? We don't have any music around. There is no tune. We have to listen to our own sound amidst the big noise of our mind. So then, there's a real test. Then as we hear Krishna's holy name, then is the test, are we experiencing Krishna? So this, we can progressively experience and then we can see, are we making progress in Krishna consciousness? So when we see that, okay, we are making some progress over the year, that is encouraging. Then we see, okay, we want to keep going. So we may have to give few years. Even the Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in the Haridam Chintamani, explains different offenses against the holy name, and then he says, in a few days, one can get over all these anarthas, one can get over all these offenses, one can chant purely. In a few matter of few days. Then we see, we try few days, we see it doesn't happen. So at least we had to give few years. We need to be committed, at least few years and see. Okay, I'm chanting for 5 years, am I making progress? I'm chanting for 10 years, am I making progress? That is more realistic. And then we can see, yes, there is some change to our heart. There are still a lot of problems to deal with, but there is some change to our heart. So that is encouraging for a devotee. And if not, one has to see what is going wrong. Are we sincerely chanting? Are we offending the devotees? Are we engaged in devotional service? So one can reflect on one's life and see, are we making progress in Krishna consciousness? So Krishna consciousness is practical. Then we can see how are we responding to situations. When devotees are telling something, what am I thinking? Who is he to tell me? Are we thinking in this way? Or is there a change to our consciousness? And if we are in a provoking situation, how our mind is reacting to that situation? So Krishna consciousness is practical. Krishna consciousness and Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam can be theoretical if we are not applying. But it is personalized and it is real when we are seeing it in our life. So that is the opportunity of devotional service, to realize the knowledge of Bhakti. So here, even in terms of merging, Srila Prabhupada Gaurjiva Goswami says that merging has different meaning. So this verse is a very good example for that, because in this verse it is mentioned that the living entities merged in the material elements. Exactly the word Lina is used, merge in the material elements. So it is merging is not just used to explain merging in the transcendence, but even in the material nature. And practically we can see that even though apparently we are merged in the material elements, still we have our individuality. So even in the transcendence, we keep our individuality. Second chapter of Bhagavad Gita gives a whole purport on the individuality. It's very important that we are individuals and we can serve Krishna in a very unique way. In Sri Chaubirishad, and second or third mantra at the end, Prabhupada gives a very beautiful purport, and at the end Prabhupada says that we all have our unique relationship with Krishna and we have our unique service for Krishna. And that individuality has to be used in Krishna service. So when we are now entrapped in this material body, we know our eternal relationship with Krishna as a servant, but we may not know our eternal service. However, since we are conditioned to our psychophysical nature, we have different natures, we have to accept, and we need to engage ourselves in service accordingly. One may do any service according to necessity, but if you want to go further in devotional service, then eventually one tend to do the services one which is more suitable. So at least predominantly one engages in a service which is more suitable to one nature. So in that way one can actually flourish in one's devotional service. And one can see that one is making progress in devotional service. So devotional service is very much practical. And Jiva Goswami gives the example of the parrot. A green parrot is entering into the green tree. What happens? The individuality is maintained. The green parrot remains as a parrot, even though it can be camouflaged in the green leaves of the tree, but still the parrot is a parrot. The individuality is perceived as it is. So, in the same way, we can see one goes to the spiritual abode and one continues one's service. The Prabhupada has always said, one continues devotional service. It is not one is now devotional service done to achieve something else. No, devotional service one continues eternally. So that is devotional service. It is both the means and the end. It's always there. We want devotional service. We are chanting to chant more. It can be daunting sometimes. We are chanting, you know, just to get something. No, we are chanting to chant more, to glorify Krishna more. We are serving Krishna to serve Him more. So this is devotional service. And by that one can experience. So one becomes actually not just peaceful, one becomes happy serving Krishna. Even though the objective of serving Krishna is to be happy, but one naturally becomes happy. Third canto says, if one thinks of Krishna, Krishna inspires such a devotee. The inspiration for a devotee is nothing but thinking of Krishna. If one is thinking about Krishna, then naturally one becomes inspired. That's why if a devotee is chanting Krishna's name, if one is engaged in japa, naturally one will be enthusiastic in serving Krishna. That's it. Krishna Bhagavan says, if one is thinking about Krishna, chanting means one is thinking about Krishna. It means one will be enthusiastic in serving Krishna because Krishna gives the inspiration. The Paramatma is situated in the heart of a devotee and the Paramatma is renewing. Even though we are chanting the same name of Krishna, the Lord has a feature. He is renewing our mind. He is giving a new experience when we are chanting Krishna's name. Even though we are engaged in the same service, Krishna is renewing our heart. He is giving a different experience altogether.
So this is the meaning of Navayauvana of Krishna. Is freshly youthful, and Krishna is giving that experience to a devotee. So rather, we get bored with chanting, but one starts relishing chanting more and more. Because Krishna is revealing, we are getting cleared, our heart is getting cleared, and also we find Krishna as more and more attractive. So here, the vision of a devotee is given, which is beyond any false ego. And even he is a devotee, is even a pure devotee, as it's mentioned this verse, is even beyond liberation. Actually, liberated soul is in one sense liberation in one sense is true, because he's liberated from the matter. But Lord Brahma says in the 14th chapter of 10th canto that really this moksha, jnana satyam bhava bhava bandha moksha, even bandha and moksha, they are just a relative terms, and it is apparently meaningless for a liberated soul, because for a liberated soul, he is always with Krishna, because he is always serving Krishna completely. And for him, liberation is meaningless when we take liberation as just getting out from the material clutches. Then, it is further explained in the purport that if somebody is in the sun planet, if someone is living in the sun planet, there is no concept of day and night. Right? There is no concept of day and night, because he is always in the night. So such duality doesn't exist. So for a devotee who is completely engaged in service of Krishna and is a pure soul, for him there is nothing like a liberation, because he is beyond liberation. He is already with Krishna. So for he is just like a person who is residing in the sun planet. So there is no concept of day and night. So that is one explanation. Second, it is mentioned that moksha generally referring to the impersonal liberation, merging into the Brahman effulgence, and that is meaningless for a devotee. So in that way, devotees are not very much concerned about liberation. It doesn't come into the purview of pure devotional service. Devotees want to serve Krishna, and one understands, one feels Krishna is more and more attractive. Krishna is all attractive, but in the course of devotional service, one realizes more and more the attractive nature of Krishna. So that gives inspiration to serve Krishna more and more, and one makes progress in devotional service. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments.
Mentioned five material elements. This is the four mentioned there, I think.
What is that?
The objects of material enjoyment, material senses, material
yes.
mind, and so this is the fifth one.
Here in the purport it's explained for the all the material elements, all the 24 material elements, all the five material elements, that is generally referring to the Pancha Mahabhuta, that is earth, water, fire, ether. Bhumi, Apo, Anala, Vayu, Kham. The five elements are the Mahabhuta. They are explained. They are described. And not only them, then the object of material enjoyment. The sense objects, the senses. And so it is actually referring to the entire material elements. So apparently a jiva is actually merged, because in one sense the merging is interesting, because the jiva is merged with the material nature because of false ego. Even though he's separate, he's merged in that sense with the material nature. Whereas for a devotee, particularly referring to a pure devotee, a liberated soul, he doesn't have that false ego. He's in this true ego, servant of Krishna. So even this merging is not existing. So is that clear? So here, that five material elements is Pancha Mahabhutas. And then further, all the other elements are briefly mentioned. And the purport actually elaborates
that. Thank you for the wonderful class. In our dealings with the Vaishnavas and also in our family life, often we see that this false ego creeps up all the time.
Yeah.
So can you give some tips on how to always keep this false ego down and
Yeah. In that, two things are important. The question is, in our family life, in our day-to-day dealings, the false ego comes to the forefront, and how to check that. Two aspects. One is the practice of observing our mind, you know, acting with some thinking. One aspect is that. That is, when the false ego is coming, we need to check, we have to keep the habit of looking, observing our own mind. What is it actually coming with? And how is it going to help us? So being observant of our own mind, our own thoughts, especially in a circumstance, in a family where we are dealing with one another quite intimately, and how this false ego is coming, and seeing that, okay, I'm not just dealing with my wife or children or, you know, relatives. Rather, we are actually dealing with devotees. They are very dear to Krishna. They are devotees, they are dear to Krishna. They may have faults. Actually, we have faults. They may also have faults. And they may speak in a way, it may not be very, very pleasant. But the intention back can be right, or the message can be right. We can get agitated just with the tone. Forget the message in itself. Message, the wrong message, okay, one can become maybe angry, alright. But one may give the right message, but the tone is changed. Or that look was not right. You know, the material world we can see, you know, he looked very, you know, that look, you know, it wasn't good, you know. So our force ego can come to the forefront in any of the circumstances. So being observant of our mind is helpful. Now, it is easy to say, but practicing is difficult. But we need to attempt. And at the same time, we need to really go on with our sadhana very seriously. So many times, if our sadhana is strong, then that can really help. Because why we can't actually tolerate? You know, false ego, that the false ego can come, but we can check it. If we are actually experiencing a higher taste in our chanting and in our service, then most of the time we can tolerate many other things. We can tolerate our own mind. Even we can tolerate the desires which is coming to our mind. Because it becomes, we see, okay, there is something higher, there is something superior, which I can see, which is really valuable. So let me tolerate this, which is inferior. So one can take the both approach. One is having a strong sadhana, and at the same time, practicing it.
Prabhu, we are talking about this, the moksha. You are talking about the moksha, and moksha is not very important for this devotees.
Yeah.
But when you talk about the devotee, you told about the pure devotee who is free from this material bondage and kind of who is already free from false ego.
Mm-hmm.
But in case of the normal devotee, we are the most of them are Kanishtha Adhikari.
Yeah.
So for us, is it not important to seek first the moksha and then used to go to the next level, transcendent,
okay,
to the next level where Krishna.
Yeah, thank you. The question is, a pure devotee is completely oblivious, he is not interested at all in moksha. Then how about a sadhaka, a normal devotee? Shouldn't he be first interested in moksha and make further progress? So I'll tell one story I heard about Srila Prabhupada, and then I'll answer the question. One devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, he wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, and the letter was this: isn't it better first we realize Brahman, and after that Paramatma, and after that Bhagavan? Can't we make that progressive steps in devotion life? So first we should, because that is a progressive realization oneself, Brahmaiti Paramatmaiti Bhagavan Vishabhyate. So first we should realize Brahman. So Prabhupada, in return, Prabhupada did not use a letter, it was a letter communication. Prabhupada wrote a letter back to this devotee. The only question Srila Prabhupada asked was, are you chanting your 16 rounds? And the answer was no. So, you know, now I'll answer the question. It's interesting how Prabhupada replied to this question. Are you chanting your 16 rounds? So we understand, even chanting 16 rounds itself is difficult. We are talking about merging into Brahman and, you know, all these kind of things. So now, for us, we have to understand what we are engaging in sadhana bhakti is actually a pure bhakti. We may have anarthas, the process of bhakti in itself is pure. So that's why the definition of bhakti is anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmati anavrutam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti uttamam. So the sadhana bhakti in which we are trying to engage is uttama bhakti. So that we may have anartha, there is no question, we have problems, that is fine, it's accepted. But the bhakti we are trying to practice, it is called uttama bhakti. If we are trying to practice committed devotional service, following Srila Prabhupada and his followers, if we are actually following that, even despite we have problems with our mind, we have problems with our body, but still, if we are engaged in that bhakti, then it is an uttama bhakti. And a sadhaka should never aspire for moksha. So Srila Prabhupada Goswami in the next chapter, compares bhakti and mukti as two witches who can come in the way of a devotee. So a devotee, even a sadhaka, is not interested in bhakti or mukti. Bhakti, how we avoid bhakti? Bhakti means sense enjoyment by strictly following four regulative principles. And mukti, we don't aspire just to avoid our material suffering. Our aspiration is to serve Krishna. A devotee's life is not just oriented to avoid suffering. So rather it is towards serving Krishna. So there can be difficulties in serving Krishna. And you do experience. That's the reality. Okay? So a devotee cannot say, let me now get moksha. Moksha is part of the process. If one realizes Krishna, moksha is included. Okay. Any further? So
if it is the truth, then how do we understand that it is the truth? What we are doing is really it will give us to the directly to the topmost platform. How do we understand this?
Because one gets the direct experience of Krishna. One gets the direct experience of Krishna. So Krishna includes everything.
So it is experiential.
It is experiential.
Okay.
So that is in one sense it is objective. We can define the consciousness of a person in the highest order, and at the same time it's experiential. Bhakti is experiential. So we don't have an external laboratory, but we have an internal laboratory where we can experience. That's how devotees become satisfied. Otherwise, a devotee can go on for year after year, or decade after decade, if it's not experiential. Actually, Jiva Goswami explains that the importance of bhakti or the power of bhakti is that even a neophyte can get some realization of the reality about Krishna. Even a neophyte, he can experience of Krishna. We come in front of the deity, when we chant the holy name, when we dance in the kirtan, one way, get experience of Krishna. Even a neophyte. One doesn't have to wait for 40 years to get some realization. One gets in the beginning itself. So that is bhakti. And one can see the reciprocation of Krishna even as a neophyte. Even as a neophyte. If you have a problem, you go in front of Radha Vallabha and pray, one can see the reciprocation of the Lord. And especially if you are distributing books during marathon, then you can see definitely the reciprocation of Krishna. Sometimes we go out, we feel like, we don't want to distribute even one book and pray to Prabhupada and Krishna, please allow me to distribute some books. Suddenly books start going. For example, half an hour couldn't distribute anything. Pray to Krishna, please tell me to distribute these books. My bag is still very heavy. Or let all this book go. It happens. People just start taking books. We can directly see the reciprocation of Krishna. People just start taking books. From nowhere, people start taking books. One time I remember, many years back, and I was doing one marathon. And I was in the city. And half a day I was trying to distribute books, half a day not even one book went. It never happened to me. I have distributed books before that also many times. Never happened. Half a day no books went. One person gave me some donation but didn't take the book. And half a day I just tried. Not even one person took the book. Then I came to process. I chanted one or two rounds. I had my lunch and chanted rounds and I prayed and I went. Then, as I went to the street, first one person, straight away, he came to me and told, are you selling Bhagavad Gita? Not an Indian person, as an Australian. He came to me, are you selling Bhagavad Gita? So, if Krishna wishes, we can send people. So, we can see always the reciprocation of the Lord. If you feel I have to do one service, I am totally incapable of doing that service, pray to Krishna. We can see Krishna's mercy. So the actual intelligence is, if you don't know what to do, then pray to Krishna. Think about Krishna. Then Krishna will give you the intelligence. So it's experience. One can see now. Thank you very much. Jai Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Jai.